Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, what's going on? This is Kevin Deers. I'm talking with Billy Howerdell. You know him from A Perfect Circle. You know him from so many different, production. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He has had albums out for a long time now, but he has his solo album. We're actually on the eve of the release as I talk to him right now. By the time you hear this, it will be already out. What Normal Was is releasing tomorrow. He's going to be playing Seattle at Numo's, great venue up on Capitol Hill. That's Sunday, June 19th. But Billy, how are you doing today, man?
I'm good. Busy. I'm busy, man. Getting ready for these shows. It's been crazy, but it's always that way. But this is particularly tough. COVID's made it added challenges that none of us could foresee. But didn't really think about it enough. How much disruption would happen even within the touring world and finding crew and your bus or immigration and things like that. So, but it's good. We're plugging along. We're trying to be Boy Scouts and adapt and overcome.
Well, you're going to be releasing, you're on the eve, like I mentioned, of the release of this album. Now you have had a number of albums out in the past featuring you, but this is the one, only one to feature your name. How are you feeling, man? How are you feeling on this eve?
Good. To be honest, I think the focus seems to be on the shows. I kind of forgot it was on the eve of the release until at rehearsal yesterday, a huge box showed up with a ton of CDs. And that was a really big moment, getting to open my first physical, a CD with, the first batch. So it was a very nice thing. And I would say it coming under my name, I mean, it was weird to now see it in print and printed out. First time. So, but the weirdest thing happened the other day when I usually have my Dropbox with all the songs in it. And if I'm singing along in the car, I go to the Dropbox folder, but sure. I finally just go, oh, I can ask Siri for, and I just say my name and she says my name back. I was like, oh, that's weird.
There you go. It is
a weird thing. Yeah. It's a weird thing.
Nice, man. Well, I'm looking forward to the full album. I'm going to be checking that out probably at 9 p.m. Pacific time here tonight and check out the songs before the album before the tour so I can sing along just like you are in your car. So big fans of yours will know that, you've done the project Ashes Divide and that was a solo project. What made you decide to pivot and have this under your name, Billy Howerdell, instead of, Ashes Divide moniker?
Honestly, a few factors. I considered calling this a different project name because the music was different enough to me to warrant a name change. But honestly, it was a birthday dinner. For my birthday last year, I went out to dinner with Josh Fries, drummer Josh Fries, Greg Pucciato from Dillinger and the Black Queen.
Yeah.
And Jerry Cantrell. Also changed. And so four of us are at dinner. Jerry was just looking through artwork stuff for his upcoming record. And we were all the three of those guys have released solo records.
Yeah.
And I played some, we did a little listening party. I went to Jerry's car. He played me a couple songs of his upcoming record. And I played a couple of mine. And they were just like, 100%, dude, use your name. They just completely couldn't have been, you know, with more conviction, and for many reasons. And the thing that resonated with me was more like them saying, like, this sounds like you, when I'm talking to you, this sounds like you singing, you know, that's one thing. Mm. Whereas Ashes, I don't know. I played Ashes Divide for my kids and they don't know it's me. So maybe that's one part, but also this kind of musically is just more the music. I think this is a representation of all the stuff that got me into really heavily into music in the first place when I was a kid, like a young teenager. And this is kind of a look back at that time for me, and to make a record that I didn't know how to make then. I couldn't have even made this record 10 years ago. I've kind of come along in my, you know, career and making music to be able to do this now. So I just thought, you know what, this represents me as a music listener and making a record to kind of honor that.
That's great, man. And you know, there's no rules. You can do whatever the hell you want. And this is, you know, this is your child, this yeah. new album, you know? So it's like, that's a beautiful thing, man. And that's cool that you were in such, you know, amazing company on your birthday. Like that's a badass little group yeah. of people. I'd like to see that you guys start a band just with those people, you know.
Dude, how about that right? I mean, and Greg's a great guitar player too. I don't know if you know that too, but
yeah
that we could get some vocal damage done, me, Greg, ooh. And Jerry. Yeah. But yeah, I just saw Greg singing Lane's parts with mm-hmm. Jerry, and oh my, you know, I knew Lane, was friends with him.
Yeah.
Hung out with him in the day. I've seen him many times. I'm telling you, Greg kills it. He's just killing it with Jerry singing those songs. And Alice in Chains was such a big influence on me and guitar wise. And now if I go to like Perfect Circle, and if you hear this record, What Normal Was, what it just put out, it's, mm-hmm. you know, all that early 80s, a lot of British, you yep. know, music that just got me going.
But here's then when New I hit, Order and Depeche Mode influence a little bit yeah. in there.
Yeah, completely. Susie and the Banshees has always been a huge one for me, but the electronic mm-hmm. elements of bands that were surrounding that in that time, it was just such a cool hybrid time. Still great song craft, but people mm-hmm. figuring out how to make guitars maybe not sound like guitars. Missing Persons, the Warren from Missing Persons, the guitar player, is like a huge influence on me of like, yeah, I don't always want it to sound like a Les Paul going through a Marshall. I want it to be confusing.
Sure.
And so that, cool. you know, kind of really diving into that with this record. But when I think about APC and why it's heavier, it's Randy Rhoads playing with Ozzy Osbourne, first two records, but it's also Jerry Cantrell's a big part. I mean, why I tuned my guitars to C sharp was I was trying to figure out Damn That River or Them Bones. I was like, oh, this guy's down in C sharp, you know, like, and I never left. I got there once I heard Dirt and then just stayed, you know, just, but you know, when I think back to like, okay, what really makes me tick? It's not exactly all the heavy guitar. It's all the melodic, you know, 80s stuff that did it. So yeah, this is kind of a bit of a time capsule. This is like a letter I'm sending back to my 13-year-old self.
Love letter to it. That's awesome, man. That's cool. So what, I mean, obviously, you know, kind of the elephant in the room was COVID, you know? So like, you know, that's obviously affected so many people in so many different ways, but for artists, a lot of them used it to, you know, focus on the albums or, you know, regrouping, revamping, doing something. Was this a COVID yeah. album, or did you have this, you know, already started a pre-pandemic?
It was done when COVID started. Wow. So,
okay.
And you know, I kind of hesitated talking about this. I suck mm-hmm. at marketing and sales, right? But when I think about the record, I got off the last APC tour ended in 2018. And I really said, okay, I'm going to go home, decompress for a month, you know, garden, plant some freaking tomatoes, and then go and start making a record. And in August of 19, I did. Like I kind of gathered everything together, tried to get a crew of people, which really came down to Danny Loner helping me co-produce this record. And then Josh Kreese came and played drums. I had another drummer named Tosh Peterson, who's a killer young drummer that you can look up and be impressed by. But started writing in August of 19 and finished with a May 20, I forget the date, May 2020 release date. So we started mixing in March. And right when we started mixing the record, pandemic hit. And so we were like on mixing song one, and it gave me, the record was recorded but not mixed yet. So we took the pandemic to kind of mix it, which was actually a nice thing, because it was, I don't know if anyone, any musicians out there will know this. You mix a record, you're in a fury of 2 weeks, you know, time to finish the record mm-hmm. on a deadline. And now I called a mixer who did it remotely. He lives here in LA, but, you know, 10 minutes away. We never met him. Still haven't met him in person. And I listened real time over high fidelity. You know, we can do that nowadays.
Yeah.
And just like in my studio, would I know the speakers, and he mixed it. And it was a great experience. And then he was really gracious with time. He'd go like, okay, here's Free and Weightless is done. Hey, you want to do this other song, Beautiful Mistake? Yeah, let's do it in like 10 days. All right, cool. Let's do that. And then it let me tighten up any things I needed for him. And it was interesting in that way. And it was kind of a nice distraction from, you know, the world being closed down, you know.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to, you know, have family time and be able to work on that. Yeah. But not that it wasn't a crazy, scary, uncertain time, but, you know, if I have to look at the bright side of it, that was one. But the title, you know, I'm sure it can be a little, point to the pandemic, but it really is about something else. It's the, you know, it really is this look back at showing what normal was musically for me. And but you know, titles or whatever, you make them whatever you want them to be.
Yeah.
And it kind of moves. I'll be talked into a better title explanation if some fan writes it on a message board. I'll probably go with that instead.
That was 100% what it was from the beginning.
Exactly. You don't know how brilliant I am. What was it again that I was brilliant about? Please clarify that for me.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So like, you know, I want to kind of ask, I'm not a musician myself. I'm, you know, just a supporter of music, longtime, you know, lover of music, radio host and whatnot. But, did this album have like, I can imagine so much freedom for you, because, you know, with bands and collaborative efforts, you probably, you know, it's like I said, like a collaborative effort. With this, it just must have been totally freedom. Is that correct?
Yeah, very much. And you know what was great? Not calling it my name from the beginning. Then I think I would be in trouble. I think the second record would be fine, but the first record, I have to, in all honesty, on the first Ashes record, I definitely felt that pressure of coming off of a band that, you know, I'm a partner in with Maynard. And so it's going to be Perfect Circle without Maynard, you know, like that's the thought, that's the dark, you know, that's the demons in me speaking back in 2006, or whatever, starting. And then, okay, how am I going to sing? I kind of just carried over how I sang with APC, which is, you know, maybe a touch like doing the higher harmonies in the live show. And it's almost like a character I was playing with those. And so now in doing this and at being Ashes Divide, I go, I don't want to sing like that anymore. I don't want to play that. I don't want to make the same record. And I want to do this and great. But if I was under my name, then I'd be like, oh, you know, this is under your name. You got to, you know, everything matters. Like everyone's judging. Everyone's always judging you. You have to think when you're a musician, but this gave a little more latitude to hide behind the moniker and in the incubation period of this, making this record, and then to switch it later, I think helped for me. I think it helped me make the most authentic record I could.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. I mean, like that's a wonderful thing, you know, like less weight on you and pressure and all of those, you know, demons, you know, kind of swirling like, oh, are they going to care? But just like that weightless feeling and then just allowing yourself to create. That's beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't feel any of that. I just really went in to make a record that I would like to listen to when I was a kid and would still, you know, and with, you know, something that looks back and has a modern, you know, kind of a step, like a sheen to it. And Danny Lohner was the same way. Like we grew up, you know, listened to a lot of the same stuff. He even edges more towards metal than I would. He's always got some obscure metal reference, but he's even more of a lover of, he's like a musical encyclopedia and a, nice. His excitement is great. You know, you just have to reel him in because he had seven great ideas all at once passionately. And you're trying to nail down which one it is, like, okay, let's hone in on something here. But it was great. It was the greatest experience because he's my best friend. So I could tell him anything. I didn't have to, when you work with a producer, you have to have that level of comfort and that level of trust to talk about the most intimate things in your life and not be shielded. And then the best stuff's going to come out. You can, you know, you can decide how much you want to disclose to the public within the lyrics, but you know, if the weight is there, and certainly the weight was all on this record, you know, and I just could talk to him about how I wanted to be presented. And he had such great ideas. I just couldn't have made the record without him, is what I'm trying to say. So, and then Danny's coming out on tour. He's playing guitar.
That's awesome. Tour.
Yeah.
Are you pretty stoked about this tour? I mean, it's going to be big, man. You're going out on tour with this debut solo album. I'll call it debut solo album, you know, obviously done stuff in the past under a different moniker, but people are coming to see you. And how are you preparing for this tour?
Dude, it's been crazy. I have to be honest. Like this, by the time we get to you, it'll be all good. We are, it's been crazy that we're 3 days out yeah. And we just ran through last night for the first time, 5 songs. And so our bass player is stuck in Canada and was supposed to be here last week. And then our crew, we kind of lost our whole crew. We've just putting it together. We still don't have a real crew, and they're finally coming in tomorrow. So it's been crazy. And that's the kind of stuff that I think everyone in the world has experienced with COVID. Yeah. You know, if you talk about supply chain issues or travel restrictions or just hiccups, the level of disruption within touring is crazy. And then someone gets COVID, you know, like mm-hmm. many people around us have gotten COVID. I'm like, knock on wood, I didn't yet. Yeah. I did back in March. Mm. But everything is, you know, everything's in flux. So that adds the excitement. It's like, you know, that's why we're doing 15-hour days, 7 days a week to try and get ready. But most of it's been like technical, getting prepared for it. Mm. And the fun part's playing, and we're just starting that. So it's, you know, by the time we get to you guys, it's going to be, you know, we will have had a couple shows under our belt. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we look forward to seeing the polished product by June 19th. I look forward
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned kind of in the, you know, the description of kind of like what led into this album, you know, kind of the 80s influence and stuff, but I'm kind of curious going back, what was the first artist or musician that really made you fall in love with music? Can you remember that?
The first thing I remember listening to at the youngest age, and this is like, you know, young, is mm-hmm. I had 4 older sisters ranging oh, cool. from 5 to 10 years older.
Yeah.
So like I was the baby, you know, mm-hmm. I mean? And I got 3 best friends that lived one house away, 3 boys. So I got awesome. The best of both worlds, right?
Yeah.
The estrogen, testosterone, you know, like injection all the time. So my sister's record collection, you know, that's what you're left with when you got siblings and you're growing up back in ancient times like I did. It's like, you know, so I'm listening to Led Zeppelin and you know, my sister came home with,
it's like the scene out of Almost Famous.
Oh yeah. Yes. And my sister came home with Back in Black.
Nice.
And she goes, this is going to change your life. She had already heard it.
Yeah.
And she borrowed the vinyl from her friend and it came out like the day before or something. And I still remember that so much. And like literally then a cassette in a Camaro in New Jersey in 1980, like the whole thing.
You know? Yeah.
So that was a big part of my upbringing. But the things that really, when I go back early, it was the Pink Panther soundtracks on okay. 8-track cassette, 8-track cartridge that was on the family stereo. I was probably, who knows, 6, 7, 8 years mm-hmm. old. And that's the thing I would put in and listen to and just listen and look at the fireplace or our wood burning stove and just like French Cafe. I don't know if anyone remembers that movie, but it's Henry Mancini is the composer.
Okay.
And I think it's what made me love film music after that. Like I got into Danny Elfman after that when I was a little bit older. And then, but just being swept away, and that soundtrack for me really got me swept away, even though that's like a comedy, but the music is really densely atmospheric. I mean, it is now, speaking of like a 7-year-old hearing it, but when I hear it now, it's like, it's completely dark, sexy cafe French, you know, romantic but somewhat silly. It hits so many emotional things, and I think that is like the earliest injection of emotion into music for me. And then going from there, being a little older, and I said like the you know, your siblings or older friends mm-hmm. record collection, the ones that kicked in for me was just that all the British what was called post-punk, mm-hmm. you know, new wave stuff. Gary Numan to, you know, I was a really big Elvis Costello fan, mm-hmm. but The Cure, I discovered The Cure during their, you know, second, third records, Faith in 17 Seconds, I mean, Faith 17 Seconds. Mm-hmm. And then the first one that, that I really latched onto was Japanese Whisper. So The Cure and Susie and the Banshees and those kind of bands were the things that I go, oh, this is my lane. Like, this is where I belong, and just kept finding things peripheral to it. And that's, you know, again, I think what's where I was tapping into with this record is the beginnings. And I honestly still listen to all that stuff I did back then. Nothing's really, not too much hasn't aged well from the things I really loved when I was a kid.
That's very great. Little. You turned me on to this. I'm going to have to go and check out the Pink Panther soundtracks. I had no idea.
Yeah, I think I remember it being the first two movies were combined in one. And yeah, they're great. It's very French, right? It's like, but the Pink Panther is an English comedian. I mean, Peter Sellers, almost like mocking of, it's so French, it's not, you know?
Yeah.
But great. I mean, it's like, it made me fall in love with France at a young age, like, because I go, oh, I don't know what that's like. But I don't know. To me, that's all music is for me, is closing your eyes or being able to be swept away somewhere else, that everything else is, the distractions go away. You're in this flow state, and getting into listening to music like that, if you can get there and then making it, if time can disappear and you're become that irresponsible musician, it's almost like a little bit of a blessing. Like, oh God, I was supposed to be somewhere 4 hours ago. I mean, that's how I wrote Judith. I mean, literally that is the day. I know the day I missed. It was Justin Chancellor's birthday, who just joined Tool, and mm-hmm. we're going to his birthday. Took a shower, got out of the shower, still in a towel, brushing my teeth, getting ready to get there in time. And just my computer set up in my bedroom where I was living in that house with Maynard. Yeah. And I like sat down and picked up a guitar, put down a toothbrush, picked up a guitar, played that riff, that initial riff. And mm-hmm. next thing you know, it's 4 a.m. and I finished the song and I missed the party. and that always happens, right? Like, you have something really important. And sometimes you're like, God, why wouldn't these things come when I had nothing to do? But there's something about the urgency that sometimes for me, unfortunately, makes it the good stuff come out. I mean, I literally wrote that whole song front to back in that one night. And that's kind of rare, you know. But I just think that that's, you know, what you kind of hope for as a musician, to have those, you know, get everything else to go away, all your distractions to go away.
Years ago, I spoke with this band Neurosis from the Bay Area, and they were, they mentioned how they don't even feel like sometimes they're writing the music. They're just a vessel from which the art like speaks through. Like, that kind of sounds like what you're describing.
Yeah. Well, let's get into how much time we got. You want to talk about free will and yeah. Like, what are we? We're just like, we're tapping into, I don't know. I'm into meditation and stuff like that. There's nothing spiritual about it. It's nothing Eastern per se, but it's getting into who you are.
Yeah.
And who that's, again, a theme on the record. What normal was for me is a little bit speaking to free will, right? It's about getting to who am I, Billy, getting upset by Jenny, who just pissed me off again about X, Y, and Z, you know, like, oh, it's interesting. I get angry about that, or I get, you know, this way. And what is it? It's just a collection of who I didn't pick my parents. I didn't pick my upbringing situation. I'm just a product of all those things. And now I'm hardwired, so to speak, to deal with the world this way. I still make my own decisions, but the reaction we have to all those things is pretty determined. You know, you're like, you're just tapping into consciousness. So what is your consciousness? What is your experience? Where is your reaction to it? I think music is so parallel, because music's like a metaphor of sorts to kind of realize those things for me, you know, and to say, yeah, music hits me this way because of what? Just like, okay, I'm making this record because my kids were about the same age as when I started this record. And what's making them tick? Why is it that this, to me, horrible SoundCloud trap music that they're listening to is turning them on. Like what is it? You know, I can't tap into it. What is normal for them? You know, it's more than just the music. It's just that their surroundings, their upbringing, their everything is making them lock into this at this time.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of trying to consolidate and I'm realizing this is becoming very convoluted and confusing, but you know, I think that just we are just a product. You know, the way we function through the world is to do with how we came out, you know, and whether it's your wiring, again, your upbringing. And I think that music just hits all of us different. I mean, it's indescribable. And I think that's the beauty of it. We all should have different opinions of things. It's nothing should be shoved down your throat.
So. Man. You're getting deep here, dude. I like it.
Yeah. Is this a radio show? What's going on? Is this, you getting paid by the hour? Am I paying you for this?
We're good, man. We're good. And we are not live, so we're fine, man. We're good. But you know,
you can cut out all the convoluted stuff you want. No offense taken.
So my final question for you, man, again, and I do want to mention again, the 19th is when you can go see Billy Howardell, at Pneumo's on Capitol Hill. That's Sunday, June 19th, and the new album, What Normal Was, by the time you hear this, is out. This question might kind of seem out of nowhere, but I do ask it from everyone I talk with. Pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got the scar.
Okay, this one's, I'm looking at it right now. My shin went on a camping trip to the Thousand Islands up in Canada when I was like probably 17.
Okay.
And we stopped at, you know, there's tons of islands, hundreds and hundreds of islands. You just stop at and you just have your own island to go camp or go do whatever. And we stopped and we were playing like wiffle ball on this island. And I went and slid into second base, which was a garbage can lid. And it just tore into the bone where it bruised and ripped into the bone. And I was like, whoa. And it wasn't bleeding. And then all of a sudden, a minute later, like beads of blood just started coming from the area where the bone was. And then it's still an indent in my leg. But I was like, it doesn't bum me out at all. It's like, it's fine. But it's like, it always reminds me of that trip, which was awesome. So it's a scar with a nice memory.
Damn, dude. Straight to the bone.
Yeah. Dude, luckily it wasn't on a cheek or something. You know? It's like the shin.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good.
Again, Billy, the album is out now. What Normal Was, playing the 19th at Pneumo's. We will see you there. Any final words for the Northwest at KISW audience?
Dude, nothing except for excitement to get there. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited. I asked friends who live in the area. I go, we've got two different rooms that are on hold for shows. And they steered me there. So
it's a great room.
Excited. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
Right on. We'll see you then, man, on the 19th. I'll talk to you later, okay?
All right, cool. Thanks, bro.
Thank you so much, man. Bye, Billy.
Take care. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.